Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Affidavit leaves some questions about stolen OPD patrol unit. A series of Freedom of Information requests made by the Odessa American don't answer some questions about a man involved in a chase that resulted in a stolen Odessa Police Department patrol unit and later an officer-involved shooting. Emmanuel Granados, 31, was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center July 31st and charged with evading arrest or detention with a vehicle, a third-degree felony, unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon, a third-degree felony, deadly conduct, a third-degree felony, and unauthorized use of a vehicle, a state jail felony. He also is being held with a U.S. Marshal's hold. The unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon and deadly conduct stem from an incident that happened July 16th at a Super 8 hotel located at 2833 East I-20. Though the reported incident happened Thursday night, no information from the Odessa Police Department or the Texas Department of Public Safety has been released since OPD spokesperson Corporal Steve Lesser issued a press release at 12:19 a.m. July 31st that detailed information about the incident and excluded the name of the man who was arrested. The probable cause affidavit and police reports that were released to the Odessa American Tuesday afternoon, but don't detail any events of the officer-involved shooting from the events that took place July 31st. Lesser stated via text message Friday afternoon that any questions about the officer-involved shooting, including the name of the man who was reportedly arrested, should be directed to DPS spokesperson Sergeant Oscar Villarreal. On Friday morning, Villarreal said over the phone that the Texas Rangers were investigating the shooting portion of the incident. The events prior to the officer-involved shooting will be investigated by OPD. The Odessa American remains involved in a lawsuit with the City of Odessa for refusing to release public information in a timely manner. According to a probable cause affidavit, at 8:15 p.m. July 31st, OPD detectives were conducting surveillance of a black Cadillac SUV in reference to an ongoing narcotic investigation. The vehicle went to multiple locations with individuals who were consistent with narcotic trafficking. Officers reportedly saw the Cadillac make contact with a red Ford Expedition. They saw the driver of the Cadillac holding a duffel bag and entered the Expedition through the left back passenger door. Officers were wearing bulletproof vests that displayed the lettering police and made contact with the subjects. Officers detained three people, and when they approached the Cadillac, it evaded officers, going west on East 10th. The vehicle lost control and wrecked near the intersection of I-20 and Meadow. Granados reportedly exited the Cadillac and hid in a bush. He saw an OPD patrol unit parked behind the Cadillac. Granados reportedly saw an opportunity and entered the patrol unit. He operated the police unit without the consent of the officer, the affidavit stated. Granados evaded in the police unit and wrecked it near the intersection of West 18th and Moss. Granados was reportedly interviewed, and he admitted to being in the passenger seat of the Cadillac, saw officers approach the vehicle, and he stated he ran because he had warrants. Granados also admitted he evaded officers, wrecked on a fence near I-20 and Meadow, hid in a bush, and saw an opportunity to enter the police unit. He stated he ran and attempted to drive to his children, but he crashed. Granados has four bonds totaling $47,500 and remains in custody as of Tuesday afternoon, jail records show.
Health and wellness. Meet guidelines to go out in public after virus. Val Sparks, Midland Health. Infection prevention has received numerous calls with questions regarding returning to work or school after testing positive for coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2, or COVID-19 infection. The Center for Disease Control has published the latest guidelines for clearing recovered COVID-19 infected patients, when you can be around others after you had or likely had COVID-19. According to the guidelines at cdc.gov, you can be with other people after all three of the following are met: at least 10 days since symptoms first appeared, at least 24 hours with no fever without taking fever-reducing medication, and symptoms have improved. For those who had a positive COVID-19 test but had minimal or no symptoms, they are considered clear when 10 days have passed from the first positive test. The guidelines, published on July 16, are meant to assure those concerned that the recovered person is no longer at risk of transmitting the SARS-CoV-2 virus after recovering from the COVID-19 infection. The guidelines stress that, except in rare situations, a test-based strategy is no longer recommended to determine when to discontinue home isolation. Please note, these guidelines should not be applied to anyone who requires hospitalization. Instead, Midland Health recommends they be referred to their doctor to determine when they are ready to return to work or school. The CDC guidance recommends that for employees who have been hospitalized, there should be at least 20 days since onset of illness before assessing for recovery. Midland Health currently has limited testing availability. We have seen our supplies slowly dwindle, and our supply chain has not been steady. We continually look for new vendors and avenues to obtain the needed testing supplies to offer rapid testing for those who are truly sick in our community. We cannot use our limited testing supplies on individuals who need clearance to return to work or school. At Midland Health, we are following the CDC guidelines, and we encourage all employers to do the same. Midland Health highly recommends that you follow Governor Greg Abbott's mask mandate of July 3 when in school, at work, or in public, and maintain social distancing when possible. Hand hygiene using soap and water or alcohol-based hand products often is highly recommended. Avoid touching your face, eyes, nose, or mouth. Clean high-touch areas frequently with EPA-approved cleaning disinfectants. High-touch surfaces include your cell phone, workspace, computer keyboard, light switches, doorknobs, and handles. If you are sick and think you might have symptoms of COVID-19, please call 68NURSE, and you can be scheduled for rapid testing at two different locations. If you have any difficulty breathing or need immediate assistance, please seek emergency care. Pharmacists need to be able to give future COVID vaccine. Neighborhood pharmacies are a safe place for adults to be vaccinated. D. Innocent Mwesiga, pharmacist. When a COVID-19 vaccine becomes available, there will be a race to ensure it is widely administered and Americans are protected. Whether that happens in 6 or 18 months from now, one way we can ensure rapid adoption of the vaccine is by ensuring that pharmacists like me are equipped and authorized to administer it. With many of America's hospitals and clinics devoted to caring for COVID-19 patients, the role pharmacies play on the front lines of public health has become increasingly vital. Since 9 out of 10 Americans live within 5 miles of a community pharmacy, we can swiftly help to ensure widespread adoption of the vaccine. As a community pharmacist, my ability to help protect the population is built on trust and relationships. I can reach a large population of busy adults on a regular basis, as people frequently stop in to pick up medications or other necessities. In a recent study, when asked which services their pharmacy could add to make healthcare more convenient, 29% of older adults cited access to all vaccines. Adult vaccination rates across the United States remain lower than what is recommended by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and well below the 90% goal of Healthy People 2020. Pharmacies can help expand access and offer an additional safe, convenient place for adults to get vaccinated. Pharmacists are trained and equipped to deliver vaccines, and they can be vital to flattening the curve of pandemics. A Johns Hopkins University study found that during the H1N1 pandemic, pharmacists were critical to expanding access to the vaccine, thus helping stop the spread of the disease. All 50 states allow pharmacists to vaccinate for the flu, but with other vaccines, availability at pharmacies varies widely state by state. Aside from the eventual COVID-19 vaccine, there are several vaccines that adults 19 and older need to protect themselves and others from potentially life-threatening illnesses. At the beginning of the pandemic, many of my patients were anxious to take any steps they could to protect them from the virus. Many came in for the pneumonia vaccine, which we regularly administer. They brought their elderly family members in search of answers. Because of the relationships we have built over time, pharmacists are trusted partners in the system of care. Being able to go to a pharmacy without a prescription and get these vaccines will make it easier on adults and likely lead to increased rates of vaccination. Expanded access to vaccines saves lives. As we look at the post-pandemic world and try to prevent the next outbreak, it is prudent to also look at what regulations may need to change to help facilitate greater access for patients. In Texas, one such measure would be to change the statute to allow pharmacists to vaccinate children over 14 and adults without being required to have an individual prescription from a physician or be under a physician's order. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services authorized pharmacists to order and administer COVID-19 tests, enabling us to step up and help address the pandemic. Having easy access to critical vaccinations makes it more likely that the entire population is safeguarded against vaccine-preventable diseases. It only makes sense for pharmacists to be able to administer routine vaccine shots like they currently do with flu shots. We have been rightly working to flattening the curve to ensure we don't overwhelm our hospital systems with COVID-19 cases. Working now to give pharmacists greater access to deliver vaccines will allow us to stay ahead of the curve and ready to defeat COVID-19. Our patients are hungry for a COVID-19 vaccine. We want to be prepared to deliver it to them.
This is the oil page. Permian Shale Drillers, Growth is Off the Table, by Rachel Adams Hurd and Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. America's prolific shale drillers are accepting a fate once an anathema to an industry obsessed with growth, drilling just to ward off production drops. The pandemic and subsequent plunge in crude prices has forced U.S. crude explorers to scrap plans to expand supplies amid investor skepticism toward the shale business model. For some of the biggest names in the Permian, that's meant vowing restraint as long as oil lingers at levels too poor to justify a new boom. Certainly, we're not seeing any signals that growth is needed, Travis Stice, Chief Executive Officer, Diamondback Energy Inc., said during a conference call on Tuesday. Growth in today's world is pretty much off the table. Management teams, chastened by crude's precipitous fall below zero earlier this year, are beginning to outline 2021 spending plans. Diamondback said it'll maintain oil output at this year's level, which is expected to be dramatically lower than 2019. Concho Resources Inc. expressed similar intent last week. Centennial Resource Development Inc. declined on Tuesday to provide 2021 production guidance. In the fourth quarter, the explorer plans to employ just a single rig, a signal of little growth going into next year. Changing metrics. Drillers are focusing shrunken capital budgets on minimizing the steep output declines unique to shale wells, which start out as gushers before quickly declining to trickles. In a handful of cases, spending has been cut so dramatically that executives expect to generate positive cash flow despite enduring the most tumultuous year since the start of the U.S. shale boom. For most of my career, we would reinvest all our cash flow and then show our success by how much we could grow our production, Concho CEO Tim Leach said last week. Well, that's not how it's going to work in the future. A moderation in growth had been anticipated for years as heavy borrowing took a toll on balance sheets and investors blanched at weak or non-existent returns. Supermajors ExxonMobil Corporation and Chevron Corporation were expected to pick up the slack via ambitious growth plans to pump 1 million Permian barrels a day each by the middle of the decade. But the pandemic threw all prognostications into disarray. Chevron is forecasting a 7% decline in its Permian production next year. Although Exxon didn't provide a production outlook when it disclosed quarter results last week, the company indicated that its daily Permian output wouldn't increase much beyond the current 345,000 barrels. Rig fleet. The scale of their pullback can be seen in the rig count. A year ago, the two supermajors were running about 70 rigs in the Permian. By the end of this year, that may fall to 14, according to executives from both companies. Stagnant production probably isn't a long-term goal, particularly if oil prices recover. Oil producers, particularly independents, have struggled for years to strike the right balance between growing output and generating free cash. Obviously, some level of growth versus the broader market is probably desirable, Bank of America analyst Doug Leggett said during Concho's second quarter earnings call. Just not 20%, 25%, 30%. This article is entitled, Oil Jumps as Lebanon Explosion Sparks Fears Over Instability, by Andres Guerra Luz, Bloomberg. Oil climbed to the highest level in nearly 2 weeks after an explosion at Lebanon's main port rocked the Beirut capital, stoking fears over instability in the region. U.S. benchmark crude futures climbed 1.7%. Footage showed what appeared to be a fire, followed by crackling lights and then a larger explosion as an enormous cloud of smoke engulfs the area around the port of Beirut. Authorities say it was caused by highly explosive materials at the port, but didn't immediately say whether it was an accident or an attack. Meanwhile, analysts' expectation of a decline in U.S. crude inventory levels in this week's government report released on Wednesday is also helping to buoy crude prices. West Texas Intermediate for September delivery advanced 69 cents to settle at $41.70 a barrel. Brent for October settlement climbed 28 cents to end the session at $44.43 a barrel. Tensions are high, and that just kind of puts a fine point on it, said John Kilduff, a partner at Again Capital LLC. Looks like there's going to be a draw in crude oil again, so we got that support as well. Lebanon is reeling under its worst financial and economic crisis, with a sharp plunge in its local currency eroding purchasing power and throwing many into poverty and unemployment. Analysts in a Bloomberg survey are expecting a 3.35 million barrel decline in oil supplies in the Energy Information Administration report. The industry-funded American Petroleum Institute will report its inventory tally later Tuesday. Still, a persistent supply overhang coupled with a souring demand outlook due to coronavirus pandemic failures has kept U.S. crude futures locked in a tight trading range near $40 a barrel since late June. OPEC and its allies plan to ease historic output curbs this month, even with global virus cases above 18 million. In physical markets, Bakken crude jumped $1.70 to 5 cents a barrel under NYMEX oil futures, the smallest discount since May. This week, Mars Blend, a high-sulfur crude, rose to $1.30 a barrel above 9X WTI futures, the widest premium in roughly a month. In another sign of how the pandemic is taking a toll on the oil industry, BP slashed its dividend for the first time in a decade and set out new targets to accelerate its shift to greener energy after the coronavirus outbreak upended the oil business. This article is entitled Noble Energy Posts Loss of $408 Million by Paul Takahashi, Houston Chronicle. Noble Energy, the Houston oil and gas producer that was bought by Chevron last month, saw second quarter losses soar as the economic effects of the coronavirus pandemic on the oil and gas industry deepened. The company on Monday said it lost $408 million during the quarter ended June 30th, compared with a loss of $10 million during the same period a year earlier. Second quarter revenue fell by nearly half to $571 million from $1.1 billion during the same three-month period in 2019. Through the recent pandemic, our teams have stayed focused on safety, returns, and cost control. And I'm pleased with our accomplishments in the first half of the year, CEO David Stover said in a statement. Like many energy companies, Noble's second quarter results were better than those from the January to March period, which saw the onset of the pandemic and widespread lockdown orders meant to control its spread. Noble lost $4 billion in the first quarter. Energy has become the worst-performing sector of the U.S. stock market as the global pandemic slashed demand for crude and sent prices for petroleum products plummeting. Companies industry-wide have cut spending, halted drilling projects, and laid off thousands of employees. Noble's loss was driven by a $264 million loss in the value of its oil-related assets, a $51 million write-down on its Equatorial Guinea project, and $30 million in corporate restructuring costs. During the quarter, the company reduced oil and gas production by 30,000 barrels per day as crude prices sank to negative $37 per barrel. Most of its production had restarted by the end of July after oil climbed above $40 a barrel. West Texas Intermediate, the U.S. benchmark, settled at $41.01 on Monday. Noble, which announced a 2 cents per share dividend Friday, was bought by California-based Chevron on July 20th for $13 billion, including debt. The deal, pending approval from Noble shareholders and regulatory officials, is expected to close in late 2020. Chevron on Friday reported a loss of $8.3 billion in the second quarter, its worst performance in at least three decades. Officials from Chevron and Noble met on Friday to start discussing integration plans. Shares of Noble Energy were nearly steady Monday, losing 2 cents to close at $9.97. This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Monday, August 3rd, 2020. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled Bush 41 is the Right Name for High School for This Time by Jay Allison, Reporter Telegram contributor. As a graduate of Lee High School, class of 81, I've been following the debate regarding changing the name of the school. If our school board, community leaders, teachers, students, and parents feel the name should be changed, then as a community, I believe we should support it. I appreciate the school board creating a commission to select a new name. I hope they will thoroughly study all alternatives and choose a name that has real meaning to our students, teachers, and great community. My suggestion would be to rename Lee High School to George H.W. Bush High School in honor of our 41st president and former Midland resident. To me, there are a number of reasons why this should be seriously considered. After his discharge from the Navy, he enrolled in Yale University. While there, he was approached by the first executive director of the United Negro College Fund to lead the campus fundraising efforts for UNCF's mission to increase the graduation rate of African-American college students and to preserve historically black colleges and universities. Naturally, he accepted. This began his long-time relationship with UNCF, which led him to being named the Texas State Chairman of the organization, as well as donating a portion of the proceeds from his 1987 biography to the United Negro College Fund. During his successful Senate bid in 1964, he was not an advocate of the Civil Rights Bill of 1964 because he saw it as an overreach of the government, not the much-needed protections it would offer minorities. When he was elected to Congress, he was one of the few Republicans supporting the Civil Rights Act of 1968, which was not a popular position with many of his supporters. As president, he was able to champion and achieve actions and results which benefited minorities and others who had traditionally been neglected and ignored. During his first year in office, he signed an executive order creating a presidential advisory board on historically black colleges and universities. In addition, he persuaded Congress to fund matching grants for HBCU students. From the moment he was elected president, he was committed to naming a cabinet that was reflective of the United States. Up to that time, most cabinet secretaries were white men, though Bush chose to appoint women, an African American, and two Hispanics during his 4 years in office. His commitment to providing a better future for all citizens included proposing a bill to amend the Clean Air Act to curb acid rain and decrease sulfur dioxide emissions, signing the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990 to provide more opportunities to those with physical and mental challenges, and signing the Ryan White Care Act of 1990 to dedicate federal funds to those living with HIV/AIDS. In 1991, he signed the Civil Rights Act, which provided more protections for those facing discrimination. On the education front, President Bush authorized federal funds to support open enrollment, incentive pay for elective for excellent teachers, and rewards for schools showing performance improvement with underprivileged students. He also founded the 1,000 Points of Light Initiative, which focused on educational needs of those living in poverty, promoting volunteerism, encouraging community involvement. And as most of us remember, he was a champion of Mrs. Bush's efforts to increase literacy in the country. I know there are many possibilities when choosing a new name for the high school, perhaps some that people would see as more deserving than President Bush. But I just wanted to share my rationale as to why George H.W. Bush is a name this Lee graduate would love to see on the campus.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, August 2, 2020. Established 1961, Rebels. Canceled? Robert E. Lee High School scene on July 24 in Midland. Everything is supposed to evolve into something better. Evan Winston, ewinston@mrt.com. MISD School Board 6-1 vote on Lee High name is proof city is heading in right direction. Here we are in 2020, and MISD voted 6-1 to change the name of Robert E. Lee High School. Read that sentence again. Yes, this is happening. Am I happy? I guess. Why was this a thing? Whose idea was it to name a school in honor of a Confederate general in 1961, the beginning stages of the Civil Rights Movement, 91 years after the man's death? So many questions I have. But the one that I have for you, the reader, is, do you believe this move will erase or rewrite the history of Midland? I don't think it will. Nobody will forget Lee High. Lee Allum will never forget the good times or the school's notable graduates. You can debate in the comments and write letters to our editor whether this was a good decision or a bad decision. But the fact of the matter is, at the time this is published, there's a school at 3500 Neely Avenue that says Robert E. Lee High School. The same Robert E. Lee who, in 1856, wrote to his wife before the start of the Civil War, in this enlightened age, there are few, I believe, but what will acknowledge that slavery is an institution, is a moral and political evil in any country. But later on in the letter says slavery was a greater evil to the white man than to the black race, and, while my feelings are strongly enlisted in behalf of the latter, my sympathies are more strong for the former, and would later state that African Americans were immeasurably better off in the U.S. than in Africa, and that the painful discipline they are undergoing is necessary for their instruction as a race. Lee's legacy is one that is damaging to the African American community. What is even more egregious is that names and symbols of the Confederacy were romanticized, and that Lee, Stonewall Jackson, and other soldiers and segregationists are remembered as heroes and had statues erected in their honor and schools named after them. When you do things like that, an argument can be made that you are upholding a tradition and a message of white supremacy, a message that we thought was destroyed with the drafting of the Emancipation Proclamation and the Civil Rights Act. Yet here we are in 2020 wondering what kind of progress has been made in race relations and equality. The answer isn't that justice was served. For the murders of unarmed black people, or that redlining and redistricting have been abolished, it's, hey, we got rid of a slave master's name on all these schools. And even then, that measure is being met with pushback on the grounds of tradition or nostalgia. Nostalgia is nice, isn't it? It's good to think about the good old days of high school, when life was simpler and the only things you had to worry about were who to take to prom, what socks to wear on game day, and when is this class going to end? I went to a small high school in the east suburbs of Cleveland, Ohio, called Beechwood High School. There weren't as many black kids in the school as there are at Lee. As a matter of fact, in my graduating class of 137 kids, only 22 of us were black. We were definitely in the minority. While we did have an uphill battle as far as getting equal treatment and the respect that the white kids had, the administration always made sure that we celebrated diversity and made sure that we felt welcome, which meant there weren't any traditions that upheld a culture that is offensive to others. We truly embraced each other's differences, not with just our words, but with our actions. That's the beauty of high school memories. You take a look back at all the things that mattered most and how they shaped you into the person you are today. You think about the games, the clubs you joined, the teachers who spoke a word to you that cultivated you into the great person that you are today. The hugs, the kisses, the shenanigans. That's what's important. That's what your identity lies in, not the name of the building you were in. Things change after your time in high school and college are done. Buildings always get torn down. Fields are no longer grass but turf. Life goes on after you leave. It's not the same because it shouldn't be the same. Everything is supposed to evolve into something better. Yet, the mistake we often make with our identity is that we wrap it into something that's dead, something that was not supposed to last. We wrap it in bad ideologies, relationships, and just things that cannot grow in this life. My question for those of you who don't want the name to be changed is this. Are you wrapping yourself in everything you believe in and your high school memories with the name of Robert E. Lee? Do you think your history is gone because his name is coming off that building on Neely? If so, then I'm led to believe that his name is a part of your identity, and that can be seen as a problem to those who don't feel the same. History won't be erased or rewritten, but you're making it clear that when that name left, you went with it. And I'm afraid the direction that both of you have gone is not forward. I'm asking you to divorce yourself from it and think about the things that actually matter, not just for your personal growth and development, but for students in Midland ISD. You can say that you're not racist, but when you're indifferent about the changing of Lee's name, you have clearly chosen a side, and it is not on the one that had 6 votes at Monday's meeting. What should be important to you is not the name of the school, but the education the children are getting. MISD has many problems that they need to address in the immediate future, as far as making sure there are no failing schools in our city. But make no mistake about this. They got this right. They had made that school on Neely more inclusive to people of color, and a new name will come soon. I truly hope they name the school after someone who has made a positive impact on all Americans, not just a select group, or maybe someone who is near and dear to the Midland community. I stated this once, and I'll state it again. Midland is showing that we can have conversations on race and that we can move forward. I have great optimism and hope that Midland, Texas will be a progressive city, and what happened on Monday was proof that we are headed in the right direction. Lee Name Change Needs Compromise to Move Community Along, by Tiffany Mead. Midland Lee rebels are uniting like never before. Citizens from near and far, young and old, masked and unmasked, are connecting over Monday school board vote to change the name of Robert E. Lee High School. Amid uncertain times of lost jobs, school closures, and virus spread, the decision to change the school's name was a gut punch to our rebel nation. As we collectively reached out to consider the fallout, a group of family listed below gathered Thursday to assess the pulse of our community. It wasn't as much a meeting of minds, but a meeting of hearts. We represent athletes, PTA members, booster club supporters, and more. We work as teachers, police officers, business owners, and parents. We are Midland citizens across every district, multiple ethnicities, and various backgrounds. While we all intersected in some form or fashion, there were two commonalities among us. One, either we were a rebel, or we love a rebel, but mostly a lot of both. And two, we all agreed it was time to usher out the school name of Robert E. Lee High School. The Rebel Nation supports changing the name from Robert E. Lee High School to Midland Lee High School. Maybe that's legacy of educational excellence, Lee, like a recently renamed school in San Antonio. Or maybe leadership, excellence, and equality, Lee. While we can honor other historical figures worthy of a namesake with the last name Lee, maybe that risks offending others at some point in time. We believe there's a compromise that pleases most. Remove all references to the Confederacy while recognizing past, current, and future students' love and passion for their school. This common ground would likely save MISD upward of millions of dollars to rebrand the school. Even if the district or individuals could come up with that type of money, we should ask it be spent on all of our schools that have so many needs not being met. We've certainly heard about those deficiencies this past year. These are not times for fiscal irresponsibility. Robert E. Lee High School is so much more than a name. It's a community of students, alumni, teachers, and parents who love each other and share common ground. Despite the name, we don't let racism define us. What defines our school is incredible pride, tradition, and love for each other. We boast a history of influential teachers, inspirational coaches, and outstanding principals. Adults who care about educating, helping, and developing kids. Not about politics or personal agendas. We don't celebrate dead Confederate generals. We cheer on students and teachers who are rich in diversity. In fact, Midland Lee High School is more racially diverse than ever before. Students and athletes alike continue to be recognized and appreciated for their hard work in the classroom and their efforts both on and off the field, regardless of color or background. We hear and acknowledge that the reference to General Robert E. Lee and his Confederate ties conjure up feelings of racism, hurt, and oppression. And it's time for Robert E. to go. Let's retire Robert E. as we did the Confederate flag and Dixie song in years past. There's no place for racism in our classrooms, hallways, or locker rooms. Not only that, but the entire Midland community and school district are in desperate need of healing and unification. This could be a first step in that direction. As we usher out Robert E. and his Confederate symbols, we continue to take immense pride in 60 years of student accomplishments, not accolades of a long-dead general, but tens of thousands of talented students and athletes, people who are proud to call Midland Lee their beloved high school. Surely we can leverage their past achievements and future potential without gutting the school entirely. We hope the citizens' committee appointed by the school board can arrive at a reasonable compromise in the renaming of Robert E. Lee High School that pleases all, offends none, and most importantly, encourages both students and alumni. It's a lofty goal, but anything less suggests a hidden agenda. One of the acronyms suggested above would certainly pass the test, but to completely eviscerate a school, when a simple dropping of Robert E. will suffice, would be irresponsible and further divide our community. Again, let's use this renaming opportunity to unite our community while building upon our good work and admirable accomplishments, not tearing them down. A compromise would move us along to where we can all focus on the real task at hand, academics and improving the education within MISD. Members of family: Alicia Acosta, Chris Evans, Earl Davis, Greg Hall, Jenny Rabb, Josh Rabb, Karen Evans, Kevin Thornton, Lanessa Thornton, Maureen Strambler, Michelle Davis, Melinda Hall, Noble Kendrick, Roderick Strambler, Rodney Floyd, Sarah Hale, Sean Lowe, Shannon Lowe, Taylor Nunez, Tiffany Mead, Tim Acosta, and Todd Mead. Did Ward consider costs involved when voting to change Lehigh name? By Georgia Temple. To Rick Davis, president of the Midland ISD Board of Trustees. The following is the lead of an online article. The Midland League Rebels are no more, wiping out a storied name in Texas high school football since 1960. To say I'm disappointed is an understatement. And I'm not alone. How are you and your little band of cancelers going to pay for the name change? Certainly not with tax money. Changing the name is a non-essential expenditure slammed onto the backs of Midlanders during economic hard times. School systems are challenged with the additional financial demands of providing school, especially in-class instruction, during the pandemic. To have Midland taxpayers pick up the cost, you need to put the request on a ballot, detail the cost, and have the community vote yay or nay. As a taxpayer in Midland, I am unwilling to pay even as little as one penny for the change when money for education needs to go to education. I have met too many high school students in Midland whose grasp of the English language is marginal and their knowledge of the United States Constitution is limited. Some think the government has unlimited cash and expect to get a free pass on their student loans and other expenses. The cost of changing the name of the high school, the freshman high school, the uniforms, the mascot, the merchandise, etc., will run into hundreds of thousands of dollars and could even cost as much as $1 million or more. Who do you think would pay the bill? Are you like those students, ready and willing, eager, actually, to ignore the cost and let others pay? Or are you and those who voted with you prepared to pay the total cost? I didn't think so. Earlier this year, economist Art Laffer said, "It's not compassionate to spend other people's money." You and the other board members who voted for the change and those who signed the petition saying they wanted the name changed need to personally raise the money to do so. All of it. By the way, I read your article in Sunday's Reporter Telegram and found it rather smug of you to be so sure you understood Midland in 1960 when you didn't move here until 1986. Then I read that you are an attorney. Perhaps you have few concerns regarding income. Did you even think about the cost? Some in the oil industry suggest that it could be 2 years before the industry returns to pre-COVID-19 levels, if it even does then. They also indicate that gas has a brighter future than oil because the latter will be competing even more than now with alternate fuels. I, like many Midlanders, have lived through booms and busts. The latter can be most unpleasant. Georgia Temple is a Lee High School graduate and a former member of the Reporter Telegram staff.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, August 2nd, 2020, Other Voices. Making History in Odessa by State Representative Brooks Landgraf. July 29th was a great day for Odessa and the Permian Basin. I appreciate the president for being here to highlight our dominance in the energy industry. In a surprise, one of the purposes of the trip was for the president to show support for the oil patch by taking action to promote our energy independence by signing 4 critical permits for vital pipeline and railway infrastructure on our border. Also, seeing all the video of Air Force One descending over pump jacks has been very neat. This was the first time in history that a sitting president has come to Odessa. And if that wasn't enough, Governor Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, and U.S. Senator Ted Cruz were all in town as well. I'm so thankful to the great team of Odessans who worked hard to put this historic event together. Bubba Salisbury, Sherry Hurt, Kirk Edwards, Sandra and Toby Oaf, and so many others. The spotlight is on the Permian Basin for good reason. United States national security is significantly impacted by our ability to maintain energy independence, and the taxes collected by the state on oil and gas production provide funding for education and highways in every corner of Texas. The work we do out here in West Texas has a global impact. The national and statewide importance of the oil field is something we should all be proud of, but pride in our illustrious history doesn't pay today's bills. I know many West Texas families and businesses are still struggling mightily amid the ongoing health crisis and dip in oil prices and demand. We are also confident that these tough times are temporary and that the tough people of West Texas will endure and emerge prepared to resume our role as America's heart and soul of energy production. That is why I remain committed to working my tail off to pass legislation during the upcoming session of the Texas Legislature to dedicate a portion of the oil and gas production tax revenue already collected by the state and reinvest them in the regions where the energy is produced to ensure our roads, schools, first responders, and workforce are always in a position to sustain Texas energy dominance. Another feather in the cap of our community was the fact that many important key Texas leaders made the trip to the Permian Basin for the president's visit. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, Railroad Commissioner Christy Craddock, and former Governor Rick Perry were among those who made the trip. Congressman Mike Conaway, Congressman Jody Arrington, State Senator Charles Perry, State Senator Kel Seliger, State Senator Pete Flores, State Representative Chris Patty, and State Representative Tom Craddock were also on hand with the president. August Pfluger and Tony Gonzalez, who are running to serve West Texas in Congress, and many others were also present in Odessa for Wednesday's historic visit. It was an honor to help host such a distinguished group and a privilege to show off our corner of Texas this week. I'm proud of Odessa and the people of the Permian Basin. God bless Texas. Landgraf, Brooks Landgraf. Landgraf serves House District 81, which encompasses Andrews, Ector, Ward, and Winkler counties.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Be wary of rapid gains in waist size. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 60-year-old female who went through menopause at age 45. My belly has blown up like a balloon, and I am often asked by people in public if I am pregnant. This is embarrassing. I have tried numerous exercises, and they all put a strain on my lower back and cause pain. Could you recommend an effective exercise for women 60 years and older to reduce protruding belly fat? GB. Answer. There is no exercise regimen that can specifically remove fat from one part of the body, despite what advertisements say. Some people will preferentially gain weight around their abdomen, perhaps due to hormone levels, and that fat can be very stubborn to get rid of. It takes patience and lots of time, a healthy diet with appropriate portion sizes, and regular exercise. However, I am concerned to hear you say your belly has blown up. Very rapid gain in inches around the middle in a woman, and especially over 50, always makes me concerned about conditions that deposit fluid in the abdomen. Ovarian cancer is the most concerning, and although it isn't very likely in any given individual, it is far too common and should be at least considered. You should ask your doctor about an ultrasound or CT scan, and if an evaluation for ascites, that's the term for fluid in the peritoneum, the abdominal cavity where your organs are, turns out okay, your doctor might give personalized advice or refer you to someone who can help with nutrition and exercise.
Dad feels helpless to mend teenagers' crisis of identity. Dear Abby, for Wednesday, August 5th. Dear Abby, my 14-year-old daughter recently came out of the closet, and it has made my husband and me quite upset. She says she's bicurious, pansexual, and polyamorous. She now insists everyone call her by a gender-neutral name, gave herself a side shave, and dyed her hair pink after we repeatedly told her not to. She wants us to refer to her as they and not she. Boys used to like her, and she used to have friends, but she threw it all away to be unique. You may think we should let her be true to herself, but in the process, she is disrespecting us and ruining her image. She thinks she's all grown up and can do whatever she wants, and I just can't get through to her. She is also letting herself go. She used to be in good shape, but she quit track and field because it was a gender-conforming sport. She is now getting chubby, looks horrible, and is depressed. Help. Dad without answers. Dear Dad, your daughter may indeed be depressed. She's at an age where she is trying to figure out who she is, and because she has lost her friends and her parents are mad at her, I can understand why. It is very important that you not panic. Her hair will grow back. Her gender identity and sexual orientation will be confirmed with time. The most important suggestion I can offer would be to love your daughter, stop criticizing her, and make an appointment for you and your husband to talk with a psychologist with expertise in adolescence. Above all, she needs the support of her parents right now. Dear Abby, I met this beautiful woman online 3 months ago. We haven't met in person yet, but plan to. We spend at least 8 hours a day online together, and our relationship has really advanced. I know she's real and not a catfish because we talk about everything. We even tell each other the L word. My dilemma is she has a second Facebook account and absolutely refuses to accept my friend request. She says she needs her privacy and it's none of my business. She also tells me her friends on that page are all male coworkers. She said she prefers to have mostly male friends in her life. Am I wrong to be upset if she refuses to let me see that profile or be one of her friends there? Am I asking too much? I asked her what happened to transparency, but she won't answer that question either. What's going on here? Stuck on her in Pennsylvania. Dear Stuck, although you have spent a lot of time online with this woman, your relationship is still new. As your relationship proceeds, how will you feel about the fact that most of her friends are other men? I do think there is something going on, which is the reason she doesn't want you to see that account. The most important question is, do you trust her? You won't know the answer to that until your relationship has developed further. So stop using the L word until you know her much, much better.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label that astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Leo and a moon in Pisces. Happy birthday for Wednesday, August 5, 2020. Directed and unflappable, with a dignified stage presence, you make this year a resounding success for yourself. Your resolute composure, not the volcano you sit on, wins the day. If single, your physical prowess attracts many, and you date many, but do not find your ideal mate this year. If attached, your relationship is intense and passionate, adding more affection this year, which your partner craves. Pisces suffers more than you know. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. Aries is the pure, bright flame of spirit, teaching the lessons of courage. Today is for communicating with that flame. Release old anger, memories, and habits that no longer serve you. Tonight, meditate on self-understanding. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Become involved in organizations. You can forge some worthwhile friendships. Friends are about to become more serious and enlist your help in community projects or charities. You will have the time, and these are worthwhile goals. Tonight, bravo. You did it. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 3 stars. Be thoughtful about communication of all kinds. Your words are powerful and will shape your future. Get organized and make reservations if you're traveling. Your destination may change mid-course, but a journey should still be successful. Tonight, give yourself an intensive healing. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 5 stars. Plan a sentimental journey to a childhood home or invite old friends to your residence. You'll keep a travel journal and send postcards. Daydreams abound today. Widen your horizons and move forward. Tonight, new friendships with foreign-born people are likely to develop. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 4 stars. Be alert to the ways partners manage joint resources. An investment might prove to be profitable. Do not be tempted by any kind of financial risk now. Insurance coverage could be a source of concern. Tonight, a friend gives you a valuable tip. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 5 stars. Discuss problems, but do not argue. Progress is assured. Legal matters are resolved successfully. An old flame can rekindle. Be aware of patterns in partnerships of all kinds. Wait until September to make any permanent changes in your status. Tonight, date night. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. You have numerous projects to complete. A move at work or home can manifest suddenly. The status quo is interrupted. Adapt. Release that which is no longer a steady factor in your life. Someone near you may be considering a new financial track. Tonight, it is worth celebrating. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 5 stars. The good times roll on. Your artistic ability is in top form. Focus on creative expression. Plan a vacation, work on a writing project, or studies. You are popular and appreciated. You might even have to choose between several prospects. Tonight, choose from the heart. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 3 stars. A stir is created at home. Family members need a great deal of attention. A healing circle is beneficial to a loved one. Bless an object to protect your household. Then you'll feel confident selecting priorities and releasing old projects. Tonight? Not so bad, actually. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 4 stars. Your neighborhood is holding secrets. Learn more about its history. A deeper understanding of sibling relationships brings peace to childhood recollections. Conversations with relatives are helpful. Lost items can return mysteriously. Tonight, all we have is a single day, according to Carl Sagan. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 3 stars. Sometimes we can't control everything. It's a good time to seek financial advice and apply for loans and grants. Iron pyrite is a prosperity stone to carry or keep in your workplace. Financial goals will be attained. Tonight, a less intense attitude toward finances surfaces. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 5 stars. Your world is a subtle one. Your charm opens new doors, both in your professional and personal life. Today favors networking. A heightened vitality adds to your charisma. Answer all emails and calls. This has extremely successful outcomes. Tonight, charm arrival. Enjoy athletic events. Born today, writer Guy de Maupassant, 1850. Director John Huston, 1906. Astronaut Neil Armstrong, 1930.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.